Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Old Ben Coal v. Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. Mr. Solomons.
Good morning, Your Honors. The principal question that's presented in this employer's appeal on a black lung claim is whether the most recent administrative law judge properly applied this court's decision in Hilliard in precluding the employer from proceeding to seek modification of an award of benefits on the medical merits. What the administrative law judge held, as you know, is that we weren't worthy of doing that because our motives were not pure enough. This court stands alone among all of the circuits in recognizing, although I think it's in dictum, I believe it is in dictum, and it can be addressed further, in recognizing that before a party seeking modification may gain the benefit of the statutory right to seek modification, they must have their motives in seeking modification tested by an administrative law judge, and if those motives show inappropriate conduct or inappropriate behavior, anything on the list of things that are deemed prohibited that you've listed in Hilliard, that the administrative law judge has the authority to say, I will not consider your petition. I think that this court should come back to the fold. The Second Circuit in Weeks Marine has obviously rejected a broad initial predicate investigation of motives as a pre-requirement for seeking modification, and frankly, I think the best authority that we have for determining the degree to which an administrative law judge can look behind an employer or a claimant's request for modification is the plain language of this statute, Section 22 of the Longshore Act. I won't read it to you. I know you know what it says. But it is clear that that language anticipates no impediment to filing for modification based upon the motives or diligence or any other conduct of the party that is seeking modification. And I will tell you this, this is a much bigger problem for claimants, although no other circuit follows the Hilliard principle, than it would be for employers. Frankly, when people seek modification, it is because they're not happy with the result that obtained in the original adjudication. Now, you can't do that very often. I mean, if I sue somebody in district court and I lose, I can't redo it. But Congress made the judgment here that in longshore cases and defense base cases and black lung cases and all of the other cases that are types of cases that come within the ambit of the Longshore Act, that a party within a specified time period can do that. And I think that this court ought to honor that choice completely. The reason we have the problem is twofold. In legislative history, going back to, I think it was the 50s, when there was an amendment to the... and by the way, you know, looking at the plain language, when you look at the decisions of the Supreme Court addressing the modification provisions, O'Keefe versus Aerojet General, Chicago Grain Trimmers out of this circuit, Rambo case, Metropolitan Stevedores versus Rambo. The language is broad, extensive, generous that the Supreme Court uses in describing this right. You don't have to meet it.
What exactly are you driving at? Do you want us to overrule Hilliard or what?
No, I don't want you to overrule Hilliard. I think what I want you to do is to hold that the administrative law judge's reasons for refusing to allow the employer to have a modification on the merits here are inappropriate under the statute, that those reasons are not valid ones for depriving an employer of its rights to seek modification under the Longshore Act. That is the holding that we object to. Now, all of the kinds of things, what the administrative law judge did here is he used the last couple of pages of Hilliard as a roadmap. And all the things that the court in Hilliard said could have been an issue that you could look into, although they were not an issue in Hilliard, none of them were. So it's all dictum. He said, yeah, well, they did that wrong and that wrong and that wrong, and they delayed, and they could have done this before, and they did a piecemeal, and it's not consistent.
Why aren't those good reasons?
Pardon me?
Why aren't those good reasons?
Those are not statutorily valid reasons.
I don't understand you.
Pardon me?
Statutes don't say people can't modify opinions, can't seek modification unless they... have terrific reasons, right?
What the statute says is you can seek modification if you're timely. It doesn't put any impediments on that attempt to obtain modification.
No, but surely the general background rule always is that you can't seek to reopen a proceeding without a good reason. Otherwise, you just go back and forth, you know, indefinitely.
That's not what Hilliard holds. That's Rule 60. That's not a longshore matter. Under the Longshore Act, you don't need a good reason. All you need is the desire to do it and be on time. That's what the statute says.
The statute says you don't need a good reason.
It doesn't require a good reason.
No, we read these things in. You always require a good reason to do something.
Well, what you're suggesting then is that there's a kind of a...
I thought last time I heard you, a few days ago, or last week, you were complaining about cases that last 30 years. Now you want a case to last 30 years.
No, I don't want cases to last 30 years.
You want to be able to, you know, diddle around and take your time, and then ask for modification, and, you know, what do we have, four opinions here?
Your Honor, I would venture to say that...
You know, and the rest you don't like?
I don't think that's fair at all. Your Honor, you know, probably...
It's not a delay game.
It's not a delay game. Employers have no... And in this particular case, there's no reason to delay. But employers never have a reason to delay unless they're uninsured. And then they might have a reason to delay. But from the point of view of their accounting...
The reason for delay is the hope people get discouraged and stop applying for these benefits.
Well, I'm sorry, but there's no proof of anything like that here, and there's no proof that I'm aware of.
Like light delay, right?
Well, my clients don't like delay. The accounting for these things makes delay a negative factor in their participation in this litigation. The reason that... Now, the cases you see are cases that raise significant legal issues. Those are cases, and it's not a matter of delay, where the employers or the sureties or whoever it is out there that's involved in these cases, those are the cases that are brought to you because decisions need to be made. There's thousands of these cases.
Can we rule in your favor without overruling Hilliard?
Pardon me?
Can we rule in your favor without overruling Hilliard?
Absolutely.
How?
Well, first of all, for two reasons. Number one, the only reason that was given in Hilliard for not allowing the employer to proceed with modification was that he could have got the evidence in earlier. That's not the case here. I mean, here Hilliard holds that is not an appropriate basis for denying modification, because it's always true in every case.
Okay, you're into your
all
mind.
The other stuff. All the other stuff that's listed in the last two pages of the Hilliard opinion, and you stand alone on all of that stuff, is all dictum.
You're into your rebuttal.
Okay, I want to ask you a question, Mr. Solomons. What of the ALJ's conclusion that all the evidence is already in the record? I know you don't want to speak to merits because your position is pretty absolute. What of that?
First administrative law judge who heard the modification, we've made an argument about that, which is maybe a little more sophisticated than is appropriate for this case. The first administrative law judge who heard the modification looked at that evidence and granted modification to deny the claim. So that's, I mean, this guy.
What about this last judge? The one
he didn't even look at it. He said it isn't good enough. He didn't look at it. I mean, if that was an adjudication, you have to throw it out on APA grounds because he didn't tell you what it was. He just said it ain't good enough. Judge DiGregorio thought it was good enough. Oh, and, you know, the other thing about this modification I think it's important for me to point out to you is that You know, you say that the administrative law judge is in Hilliard is uniquely suited because he's there. He sees all the stuff that's going on to Judge Motive. Judge Purcell is 15 years removed from everything. He never saw a soul. He doesn't know what anybody did. So, I mean, it doesn't even work on that grounds.
We're to presume he didn't examine the record. Is that the presumption?
Well, he looked at a cold record. I mean, he saw a cold. I don't know what he looked at because he didn't tell us.
Well, that's of course how delay favors defendants, right? Plaintiff has the burden of proof. Defendant says, "Oh, 15 years ago, evidence stale. ALJ doesn't know it," right?
You know, if I can't make you believe,
more attrition against the plan.
As an economic factor, the delay is not beneficial to insurance carriers or especially to self-insured companies, then I don't know how to do it. Maybe next time we'll put proof on, but I guarantee you that it is not beneficial to them. You see strange cases. You don't see most of the thousands of cases. They are not delayed by employers.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Solomons. Ms. Fogel?
First of all, for the record, the reply brief was just recently filed, and we didn't get an opportunity to respond. 2 days ago, I got the reply brief.
You wouldn't get an opportunity anyway. That's the end.
Well, because we want to object and move to strike two of the arguments that are in that reply brief because they do not they go beyond what the court ordered for the reply brief.
Are we unique, the Seventh Circuit unique in the Hilliard case, our ruling in the Hilliard case?
Well,
every other circuit adopts a different rule? Or?
No. I only briefly looked at that, but there are courts that have followed Hilliard.
Have you,
and I don't, I can't
cited,
tell you. Pardon me?
Have you cited them? The cases that follow Hilliard?
No.
As opposed to,
no, Your Honor. I didn't think that was necessary. I'm.
Well, if his position is correct, that we're the only circuit in the United States that takes this position, it would be interesting at least for us to review it, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. Hmm. And I would take the opportunity, too, if the court would like that.
I'd like it, but you?
Sure.
Yes. I want to start with the argument about.
Pause.
Pardon me?
My brethren say that that's a perfectly valid position. Tell us. You have to say. 10 days, Judge Posner?
Sure. Is that a reasonable amount?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
This appeal should be dismissed, and I would like to focus on that issue. Mr. Solomons claims to represent Old Ben. Old Ben does not exist. It hasn't existed since September of 2004. He has no client in this case. And in order to appeal to this case or to this court, a party has to be aggrieved by or adversely affected by the board's decision, which Old Ben doesn't exist in it, and it's not harmed by the decision of the board. He also alludes to, and I think it's just in the reply brief, a surety having interest in this case. But a surety was given the opportunity to intervene if it felt it had an interest below, and no surety stepped forward, and this appeal, you know, it should be dismissed because Mr. Solomons can't exercise any rights on behalf of Old Ben anymore. He withdrew from the case when it was before the board because Horizon, which was the successor to Old Ben, who was dissolved in bankruptcy, told him to. They told him to withdraw, and he did. And then because he didn't like the decision that the board issued, then he files the appeal here. And we should not have been dragged up here to respond to an appeal when there's no standing to appeal.
Are you saying Old Ben Coal Company is no longer a party? It doesn't exist anymore?
It doesn't exist, Your Honor.
And it's the only party named in the
That's correct.
Case. Well, that is a problem.
Now, on the modification issue, the last judge in this case followed Hilliard, followed it to a T, recited the standard from Hilliard four times, in his discussion of this case. You know, Hilliard set the standard. The ALJ discussed it, used it as a guide. It's not, this case isn't...
Is what you're focusing on or what he focused on the reference to diligence as a relevant factor?
Well, that's the main reason.
Mr. Solomon's talking about, the last two pages that he didn't like in Hilliard. Is that right?
Well, I saw it throughout Hilliard.
Well, I think it's toward the end that the opinion says that, you know, we're not saying that diligence isn't important. Is that the essence of what you're saying? Diligence is important, even if accuracy is.
It is important. The Hilliard court said that. It said that is one of the reasons that the court could consider when it decided that accuracy does not trump finality. And we were here for Hilliard. We argued Hilliard. We spent a lot of time on the Hilliard case, and this judge did too. What Old Ben did in this case was totally uncharacteristic of Old Ben. It never acted this way in any case, and not in any of the Old Ben cases that came up to this court. It floods the record with evidence, floods it at the very outset of the case. Millions, hundreds, thousands.
Who flooded the...
That's typically what Old Ben...
Who did the flooding?
There was no flooding.
No flooding in this case is what you're saying?
Because Old Ben came into that modification hearing and said to the judge, we don't care what happens here. There's an offset. We're not going to have to pay anything if you deny the claim or if you award the claim. We don't have to do anything because we're not going to have to pay. That's what Mr. Reynolds told Judge Lawrence at the modification hearing. He asked for more time to develop the evidence on that issue of an offset, and what happened was he got confused with there being a state claim award with a state insurance disability payment to Mr. Melvin. Mr. Melvin was last a state employee, and he had state insurance that covered his non-occupational injuries. And Old Ben confused that with a state claim. There had not been a state claim award at that time. And that is why Old Ben did not develop this case or defend against this claim. And then after the award was issued, well, actually after the hearing but before the award, Old Ben was supposed to bring in all this evidence. Mr. Reynolds didn't do that. I did it on behalf of Mr. Melvin. We developed all that evidence. We submitted it. Old Ben did not file a closing argument, had no position in front of Judge Lawrence on this case because Old Ben didn't care. They file an appeal, didn't file a brief. Instead, they said, well, we'll go back and do modification. Did nothing in front of Judge De Gregorio. We asked for a decision on the record with an opportunity to brief the case. Judge De Gregorio went ahead and issued a decision without the benefit of our briefs. When he granted the modification, it went up to the board. Old Ben didn't participate in that either. Old Ben wasn't participating because Old Ben still thought it wouldn't have to pay a penny in this case. And therein lies the lack of diligence.
Let me go back to the this question whether we there's any case here. So Mr. Solomons relies on this statement by the bankruptcy judge in Kentucky saying that all claims for benefits under the Black Lung Act shall not be dismissed, but instead allowed to proceed to final adjudication with the applicable debtors as parties. Now, isn't that suggesting that although Old Ben was dissolved in every other respect, it survived as an entity to contest these benefits claims because someone else might have to, you know, insurance company might pick them up?
Well, Old Ben was self-insured, and the way that I understand that is basically the next sentence of that order, which says that the reason they're keeping Old Ben named and just named as a nominal party is so that the Department of Labor could go after the sureties or, as that bankruptcy court said, other responsible parties. And these self-insured companies signed indemnity bond agreements. It's a form. It's a Department of Labor form. And that's all that form says is if old Ben is liable and cannot pay this claim, you will. We will come after you.
Right.
And in a separate action, there's nothing in there that gives the surety the right to act for old Ben. There's nothing in that agreement.
Did the surety intervene in this case?
No, Your Honor.
Did BP America intervene in this case?
No, Your Honor.
Did Greenberg Taurig represent them at the administrative hearing? Or?
No, Your Honor, because I think that didn't happen until the year that ALJ Purcell issued that last decision. That is the same year that Horizon was dissolved in bankruptcy.
Well, perhaps Mr. Solomons can give us a different timeline. Okay, thank you.
But suppose he's been paid for by St. Paul Travelers Insurance Company. Doesn't he have to fight this in order to protect their interests? I mean, isn't that what the bankruptcy judge envisaged? That these dissolved companies would continue a kind of spectral existence so that the surety companies would be protected against having to pay for a claim that had no merit? Isn't that the idea?
We have a lot of these Horizon cases and with the bankruptcy issue. I'm no bankruptcy expert. I've explored it. I've talked to law school professors. I've talked to bankruptcy attorneys. Our firm hired an attorney in this case to represent us and our clients in the bankruptcy action. And to the best of my knowledge, the surety does not stand in the same shoes as the company that it issued the bond for. That it's not the equivalent of an insurer. And the regulations completely distinguish between insurers and self-insured employers. They chose to self-insure. They chose not to go get insurance coverage for these claims. And the insurer does come in, and it often is involved in these cases with representation. But there is no provisions for surety stepping in.
How did Standard Oil get into this?
I only saw that in the petitioner's brief. I don't know, Your Honor.
Runs in favor of Standard Oil.
I believe they have something to do with the surety. But I think Mr. Solomons can answer that.
Wasn't Old Ben owned by Standard Oil?
Pardon me?
Wasn't Old Ben owned by Standard Oil of Indiana?
That's what the petitioner's brief said. At one time, it was.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ms. Fogel.
Thank you.
Mr. Solomons, how much time does he have? Oh, I will give you a minute, though. Maybe you can address this jurisdictional issue.
I'm not here pro bono. Say that.
Who pays for you?
BP America. This is now, most of the time, this court in this kind of program, many other kinds of programs, doesn't know who pays the bills, doesn't know who pays the claims. I mean, these bankruptcy court and the circumstances envisioned by both the Labor Department and the bankruptcy court was that the cases would go forward against the debtors. The bankruptcy's not closed; it's still open. There's a liquidating trustee, and they may have to pay some of this if they have any money. We don't know that. And the Labor Department announced its intention to go after the sureties for other companies, not Old Ben. I mean, these guys were not sureties for Horizon Natural Resources, which owned Old Ben, which were the operating companies that had this liability. So they said to them, they said to the sureties, well, you may be responsible for this claim. Surety has contractual arrangements with other people, indemnitors, and they have a duty to mitigate. So what they did is they go pay a lawyer to defend the claim. They clearly have an interest.
But
the Labor Department says so.
Did BP America intervene in this case?
No, they wouldn't have any standing to intervene.
So, and that's your client?
Yeah.
You're here with a client with no standing in the case?
No. The department can't sue BP America under any circumstances because there's no privity between the Department of Labor as the payor of benefits in this case and BP America. They got to sue the surety. The surety, in this case we think, we're never really sure, is St. Paul Travelers Insurance Company. St. Paul Travelers Insurance Company is notified under a bond that it's going to be, as far as the Labor Department is concerned, it may be responsible for paying all or part of this claim. If they do have to pay all or part of the claim, they're entitled to reimbursement for everything from BP America. So this is not an unusual situation. I mean, we have an interest, and we're defending it.
There is some surety standing behind Old Ben, is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a surety standing behind BP. There's a surety that would be standing behind the Labor Department's. This is a long story. The Labor Department.
Well, what if Melvin got a judgment against Old Ben?
The Department of Labor.
Suppose we affirmed in this case. What would be the next step?
Department of Labor would pay the judgment and it would bring a claim against St. Paul Travelers.
And what's. What?
To the extent that it wasn't covered by the liquidating trustees' remaining assets.
So you're saying St. Paul Travelers is the insurer of Old Ben?
No. St. Paul Travelers is
I don't understand. If Old Ben is ordered to pay a judgment, how is that collected?
The Department of Labor is going. Probably can't collect. There's a lot of bonds out there. There's some insurance policies out there. The Labor Department thinks that St. Paul Travelers, not as a surety for the owners of Old Ben, which was Horizon Natural Resources, or Old Ben as a subsidiary of Horizon Natural Resources, but as the surety for Standard Oil of, I believe it's Ohio in this case, actually. But
Standard Oil of Indiana.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake. I was confused, and I'm sorry about that.
Who is your client again, please?
My client is both the St. Paul Travelers and BP America.
Neither of which are parties.
Well, they're liable. They have an interest in the case.
You are here representing parties, firms were not parties to the lawsuit.
Well, I disagree with you that and that you're.
I never heard such a mess.
Let me say that in black lung cases and a lot of different kinds of insured cases, probably FELA cases, any cases where there's insured liabilities, you don't know who's paying the lawyers. The benefits, and they're not parties. That's very, very common. There are pools that do it. There are all kinds of setups out there in all kinds of programs.
Maybe we can get out of the black lung business.
Well, I mean, the Labor Department's still going to sue us, and one of them, we just have an additional defense.
Who is us being sued?
They're going to sue the surety.
Us?
The surety.
Well, when they sue you, when they sue the surety, you can defend, right?
Can't defend the claim.
Well, you know,
when
why
we
not?
Sue the surety, we cannot defend the claim on its merits when they sue the surety.
Why not?
We have no. There's no mechanism for being able to. There'd be no jurisdiction in any court for that to happen. They'd have to sue us in federal district court. Federal district court has no jurisdiction to decide the merits of one of these cases. See, there are different kinds of surety bonds in the Labor Department. Failed.
But Old Ben doesn't exist anymore.
That's not true. It does exist. I mean, it exists in the bankruptcy through the bankruptcy court order, and it doesn't exist as a company that's mining coal. It exists as a part of the
bankruptcy.
There's
been no final order of discharge in the bankruptcy court.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll try to sort this out.